Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to welcome Kevin Stewart of KPS Reliability. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to talk with your folks.
Perfect. And Kevin, so you have quite a bit of experience in maintenance, reliability, asset management, all those great things. You have 34 years experience starting off in Alcoa and then, you know, working through a variety of different organizations from there, ARMS included, where you learned and taught extensively on root cause analysis. And then after, you started KPS Reliability, correct?
That is correct.
Now, what did I miss in there? It was a quick summary. Any big key points you want to call out from there?
34 years was the total of my career with Alcoa, and I retired from them and went to some ARMS for a bit, for a stint there. The first 14 years of my Alcoa career was a plant engineering type, and then I flipped over from there into the reliability and maintenance side. So that's probably the only blank that might be showing up on your introduction.
Okay, very good. And when you say reliability side, what does that mean?
I did a stint as a maintenance engineer for a couple of years. That's when I decided that this is what I want to do. Then production manager called me and said, we want to do something about reliability. He didn't even know what it was. And he'd seen something from DuPont. This was back in the early 90s, so it wasn't a lot of information out. So what we did was we said, what is it? Went out and got some training. There were two of us. And went out and got some training and decided this is the right thing to do. So when we talked about reliability, we're talking about basically trying to fix things from failing. And we went through the whole nine yards of getting the true reliability training from some of the folks within Alcoa and some other places. Got a lot of other types of training just to tide us over until we got back to the plant, and then we started in working in several areas to improve the reliability of specific areas of the plant.
And in 2016, you started KPS Reliability, and what does KPS Reliability focus in on?
I started to help the bottom line of companies. It sounds kind of a cliche, but it's true. But I did that by thinking that we could help them improve the reliability by solving one problem at a time. That's kind of my mantra, because reliability is about eliminating failures. So we decided that our experience in some of the areas of plants showed that we could improve things by fixing problems, and it affected the reliability. So we realized that problem solving was a big part of that. So we went out and got the training, and that really worked. Then we developed a 10-step program, which includes a couple of spots where that's important. So the company was formed to help companies improve bottom line by solving problems and applying the standard asset management techniques that gets them improves their margins and improves their plants.
All right, very good. And you focus a lot on that problem-solving piece, which is why I brought you in today, is to talk about that problem-solving piece, the root cause analysis, root cause failure analysis, defect elimination, all these different terms. But that's essentially what problem-solving is, correct?
That is correct.
All right, very good. And I believe you are partnered with Apollo Root Cause, correct?
Yes, it's referred to as the Apollo methodology, but many people might know it. They're trying to make a switch to the term reality charting. The software is known as reality charting, and you can find it in both Apollo methodology, which is trademarked, and also as reality charting.
Okay. And, you know, you mentioned that problem solving was one of the key steps to improving the bottom line, but what truly got you started in root cause analysis?
I mentioned that the production manager decided they want to do something about reliability, so we went out and got some training. And so when we went out to this area, the first thing that we ran into was all sorts of stuff that wasn't working. And people would be putting things in place and trying to fix it, but it was only restoring flow, and the problems kept reoccurring. So we did some research and traced down some things and found out that there was such a thing called root cause analysis. So we got a couple of courses. Actually, it was two. We went to the first one, didn't seem to fit for us, and then we got some training from Mr. Dean Gano, who founded the Apollo methodology back in the 1990s, and that just seemed to hit it off. And so we got back to the plant, started applying it, and it worked for us. We solved tons of problems, saved lots of money, and that got me started. And then I became, some people have referred to me as a zealot about the whole thing, but that's how I got into it.
Yeah, I remember seeing a study, and I can't remember what it's from. Maybe the manufacturing game. But it looked at, you know, the combinations of planning, scheduling, preventative maintenance, not only got you so far, but what really made the difference was that problem solving, or defect elimination, if you will, which is why I'm such a big believer in having a strong root cause analysis program. Now, with that, can you explain to our listeners what is root cause analysis? We use the term Apollo, reality charting, root cause analysis. What does that actually mean?
There's actually a dean and some others got together and said, you know, there is no definition. We talk about finding the root cause all the time, and that's great, but we never seem to talk about what is root cause analysis, the act of finding that root cause. So they got together and actually put together a definition, and I've always liked it, and we continue to use that, and I'll just repeat it here for you. It's any structured process used to understand the causes of past events for the purpose of preventing recurrence. I like that. I think it gets at the meat of what we're truly doing. And you'll notice it doesn't mention any specific methodology, and that's because it doesn't need to be that. There are many types of cause and effect analysis out there. Apollo is one of them, but there are some other terms and other types also. But as long as you get to eliminating the recurrence of a problem, who can say that's not the right thing to do? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as long as you have a structured process that's repeatable and delivers the results you want.
Correct.
That's the important part. Now, why is this root cause analysis so important to organizations?
You kind of touched on it, because I was going to mention, and I will mention that same information. The diagram or the information was put together by Day and Page from DuPont. And there actually is a chart, I've got several copies of it, that talks about doing defect elimination in addition to what I call, what you could call the big three. The big three would be planning, scheduling, and then the third one was PDM and PM. And it shows how if you do one of those individually, you may not get as much as you'd like. I think it's like the maximum was if you did all three, you get a 5% increase over reactive maintenance. But when you add defect elimination into that, you get the big improvement of 15% over that. So you get a total of 20% improvement on your reactive maintenance. And that was the basis for the manufacturing game. And if your listeners haven't taken that, if they get an opportunity, I found that to be a very enlightening opportunity to really experience what that is. And that is one of the reasons I became a zealot, kind of like you. It's so efficient. It's so important to do that. If you do all the other things, great. You may just be doing them more effectively. For instance, if a bearing fails every year and you plan and schedule it and don't have a failure, that's great. You don't have any unplanned maintenance. But what if that bearing is supposed to last for 8 years? Then you're doing a lot more work. And so that's where the defect elimination is so important and so valuable to the companies.
Yeah, absolutely. It goes back to the basics, doing the right maintenance at the right time. And if you have a good root cause analysis program, you can truly understand what is that right maintenance at the right time.
That's right. You don't want to get efficient at doing bad maintenance.
Exactly. You got to be effective first, then you're efficient. Now, with that, I have seen many root cause analysis programs that don't deliver results. Have you seen that before?
Yes, I have also. And I'm not so sure I would say that that's just associated with root cause analysis. In my career with a large corporation, I found that it really was many programs that had this same problem. And when you start looking at why, my internal impression was that it was not led from the top. There can be good managers and all sorts of things, but I always used to attribute it to sponsorship, because anytime you looked at a program that they wanted or a process they wanted, and you said, why did this one work? It was always because there was some guy, usually a high-level ranking person, but it didn't need to be. But it was some guy who had enough clout to make it happen. So the ones that I've seen that fail are because there just wasn't that involved sponsor or high-level sponsorship at the best levels to make it happen. We used to benchmark Cargill quite a bit, Alcoa did, and they always had a high-level VP, and they attributed a lot of their success to the fact that they had a high-level guy. So I truly believe that if you have that high-level sponsorship, you can probably make it happen, and that's also the reason that many of the programs don't go on.
Yeah, I find in many organizations that high level support or sponsor is lip service only. They're not actually in it helping, knocking down those barriers, doing what they need to do to drive that program to success.
That's right. And they'll say all sorts of things, but if they don't show up to the meeting, if they don't ask for things, if they don't want to see the root cause analysis, stats and statistics, it just doesn't work. And I had a manager who I felt was pretty good, and he didn't necessarily do that, but if you call me a change agent, he sponsored me. So if I asked for that stuff and they wouldn't give it to me. All I had to do was mention his name, and I got it. So there's two ways to do that. One, they can be the individual sponsor and show up, or they can sponsor what you call a change agent to make sure that they can get what they need. So I can work either way, but they have to have that drive. So
yeah. Now, once we have that sponsorship and we're trying to get the root cause analysis program going, what components or pillars does a good program have?
Well, I have a program that I put together that I call the 8 pillars, and I'm in the process of finishing that up. I've started the blog article, and I've started out with 8 pillars, and I'm working on each one of those. I think I'm up to 3 or 4, so the readers, if they want to, can start to follow that. But the individual pillars that I believe are part of that would be, and I'll just mention them here and not go into any detail, but they are some kind of resource plan. You do have to say who's going to do this, how much time it takes, an involved sponsor, which we just talked about. There has to be a clear trigger mechanism. You have to say, when am I going to do this, and how often am I going to do this, and do I have enough resources to do as many as I'd like to do? There has to be some clear evidence collection protocols and how you're going to save and what you're going to do with evidence. There should be some kind of standard reporting process, which includes the type of analysis that would be required. You can't do an official, solid, week-long study on everything. Some things don't need it, so you need to have that. Then there has to be a tracking system. They also have to have a process for you, the accuracy, common causes, and missed opportunities. Otherwise, you will not get the value out of your program. And last, you need to track and report the value, because if you don't, somebody someday will come and say, what do I need you guys for? The place is running just fine. I used to tell my reliability engineers that, because, and I'm not sure they agreed with me, but I actually found that one time where they said, look, you know, the place is great. We don't need all this stuff. And I actually inherited a bunch of material from one of our other plants where it was pretty obvious that that's what happened. Once they got the place up and running, everybody said, we don't need that. They cut the department to shreds and everything just disappeared. So I used to caution the reliability folks that they need to be very, very careful and advertise what they're doing. So
yeah, the one component I see missing in a lot of programs, not just root cause analysis, but it's the marketing end or sales end of what we do.
Yes, that's right.
Engineers and technical people, we don't care about that stuff, but it's documenting the savings, advertising the saves that we had, the good work that we do. That's what keeps us funded and not on the chopping block when everything works fine.
I agree. And we used to, as a result of that, I put together a spreadsheet. And every problem that the engineers did, they were required to save double their salary. And that ended up being about $250,000 a year. And each one was responsible for documenting those kind of savings. And at first, they fussed about it, but then they started doing it and they realized it wasn't that difficult. So we used to say that reliability engineers were free. That was always a tough one to swallow. At one plant where they had a hiring freeze, and the reliability supervisor went to the plant manager and showed him the graph, said, here's what my guys are doing for you. And the guy said, okay, I'll hire one of those. So it is very, very important, and it can be very valuable for you.
Yeah, you have to have that documentation to back it up.
That's right.
Now, speaking of documentation, can an organization just provide an overview of root cause analysis, say, read your blog post, hand them some templates, and expect great results?
I don't think so. I've had many clients and people come in and say, well, we got this stuff on the internet and we tried to use it and we aren't getting any good results. Well, that's because they hadn't come to training. When they finally get to the training, everything seemed to make sense. So you have to have a documented process, what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, how often you're going to do it. You have to have the training that goes with it and all of the stuff that goes along with those processes. And it's so easy to just say, well, let's just go get some training and do some root cause analysis, and it works just fine. But again, if you don't document it and all that, you don't go anywhere. But I don't think you can get there without some formalized processes to deal with it.
So with that, and training is vitally important in preparing an organization to be ready for root cause analysis, correct?
That is correct, yes. You're going to need to provide all sorts of training for everybody at different levels.
What do you mean by different levels?
Well, surprisingly, every manager needs it. They need to know what this is all about. They need to know what resources are going to be required. They many times say, I want a root cause analysis program. And then they just expect that everybody on top of their own jobs, which they currently have, otherwise they wouldn't be there, are just going to do it and figure out how to do it. But most people believe they're being effective and efficient at what they do now. So if this has got to come from somewhere, something's got to give. So the managers have to know. The participants have to know what's going on. If you start a program. And then you just start talking about causes and action causes and conditional causes in our terminology. If you talk about, help me figure out what to do about this process, and then they believe they're going to get fired, and there have been clients who have said that's happened, they aren't going to help you. So they need to understand what the whole thing is about. They need to know it's not a witch hunt. Then you have to have some facilitators. We'll say experts at doing this. If you don't use it, you lose it. So those people need to do a few of these on a regular basis to get better at it. You should have a, we call them a champion, a program champion, who is responsible for making sure all of these things happen, the tracking, all the pillars are in place. They also provide some quality control. So that high-level person is the one that's responsible for making sure that the program gets implemented and put in place and continues throughout time that plant wants it to be happening.
All right, we have to have those different levels of skills and training to make the whole program work effectively.
That's true.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
All right, very good. Now, how important are interviewing skills in a root cause analysis?
That's an interesting question. And I think they're important, but as I thought about that a little bit, I'm thinking, I've done some interviewing for college interviewing, those kind of things. So I've had some training, and on occasion I've had to do that. But many of the analysis I do when I get called in to facilitate, it's more asking questions around what happened and how it happened and putting that down. So I haven't had to do a lot of interviewing in that respect. However, it does depend on the analysis. I have had some where if the major issues are with people or inside people, in the sense you have to get that information out, if it's eyewitnesses or something, you will have to interview folks. And if that's the case, interviewing skills are going to be very important, because you need to be able to put people at ease so that they won't think you're trying to fire them or witch hunt them. You also need to make sure you can gather the right information. It reminds me a little bit, a couple of things. In one of my classes, a client was from the FAA, and he kept saying, he was laughing, so we asked him what's going on. He said, well, we had an incident, we were investigating it, and we kept asking him, did they see the flames? And everybody kept saying yes, and they did that several times. And then they finished their investigation, they realized that there weren't any flames, so they tried to figure out what happened. They realized, of course, they thought we were smart people, and we kept saying, did you see the flames? And they said, sure, I guess these guys know what they're talking about. So there's a case where the interviewing skills might not have been as good as they should be, and you can lead a witness to give you all sorts of answers. Another interesting thing was a study down in Australia where they showed two individuals what they said was the same video. So they showed them the video, then they got them out, and they let them talk to one another. Then they separate them, and they asked each individual questions about the video. Each individual reported seeing things that weren't in their video. The reason is because people talk to one another, and they truly did believe they saw those things because their brain just filled in some of the blanks, and it was a really interesting study. So the other issue around interviewing people is you also have to know enough about those kind of things to realize that they may be telling you what they believe is the truth, and it may or may not be actually what happened. So there's a lot of interesting things that go wrong along with interviewing, and so skill is important in both asking the right questions and also understanding the human mind and how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very important to have being able to ask the right questions, not lead the witnesses, all that, depending upon what the situation is that you're facilitating that root cause analysis or investigating. Now, we have the training, we have the skills, we know how to ask the right questions now, we have the process and templates. Do we need software for an effective root cause analysis program?
I'm going to say that the simple answer is no. That may seem strange, and don't misunderstand me when I say that, indicating that I wouldn't use software. That's far from the truth. But the process that we use, I have used way before there was software. I did it many times, so it wasn't necessary to get an effective answer. So the short answer is no, you don't need the software. But now if you ask that a little differently and say, can I be more effective at it? The answer would be probably yes. It can help you do all sorts of things. One, document all the evidence, all the information. It can help you cross your T's and dot your I's, because We have, it has about 7 rules that it runs through. And so when you put a chart together, it just says, are you sure you know what you're doing here? And so many times you'll find some things that are missing, and that makes it better. It can be very helpful from a solution standpoint also. So the documentation part of it, I think, is very good, but you can do them without it. But I would also say that I personally never would, but I can't say with that it is absolutely necessary.
Okay. Yeah, it's like other things. If you start looking at, you know, some statistical analysis packages, if you don't understand the statistics, that software package is just going to give you the wrong answer quicker or give you a much more extreme wrong answer. You have to have the fundamentals down, and the software just makes you more effective and efficient at it, but you still have to have that fundamental understanding.
That's right. I remember when we were putting in new maintenance software, everybody said, oh, great, you know, we're gonna improve our maintenance. And I went, no, not necessarily, because the software will just help you be better at being crummy. The whole issue was that we actually got in and started looking at it. We said we had terrible maintenance processes. So the software was designed around software processes. And that was where the big issue was. When we started asking people to change the way they do business, that's where they fussed. But that's where the value was. The software itself did not help us do better maintenance. Better maintenance process did. And like you said, that's exactly the same with the root cause analysis software. It doesn't do analysis, but it can help you improve what you do and document.
Absolutely. Now, an organization at this point should have everything in place. They got the training, the software, they got the processes, documentation, all that stuff. A failure occurs. What are the first steps that organization should take when that failure happens?
Again, I hate to always be repeated, but it is important because especially in root cause analysis, there's different levels. So I always say let the consequence drive what happens here. But in general, regardless, you're going to want to try and preserve the evidence and the information. You're going to want to find the people, if necessary, so that that you can separate them. As we talked before, if you don't want them talking to other folks to modify their stories, not because they're being bad people, but just because. So and there's been a lot of work done on first responder investigation techniques, etc. There's classes you can take about all those kind of things, but they all say the same thing. You want to cordon off the area. If it's serious enough, you want to cordon off the area, and you want to get the right people in charge. You want to make sure you get your witnesses and interview them if necessary as quickly as possible. And there's all sorts of interesting things that must be done. If it's really a serious one, you may want to capture data out of your process computer information. Sometimes they write data every 24 hours, so you might lose it. A 24-hour continuous running video, if you don't get the tape out, you'll lose what might be there. So that's all along the same lines. It says first order business is to quarantine the area off, protect the evidence as best you can with people and things like that, and then proceed accordingly with. And sometimes it might be to get other people to help, because there was a gentleman that worked with the Apollo group a long time ago that's what he did, and they would call you up and say, I want you there tomorrow. And that was what it was for, so he could help make sure that they did all the right things on that.
Now, we covered a lot about root cause analysis. I have a few more questions for you before I let you get to your night.
Okay.
But do you have any tips or words of wisdom you want to share with people who want to get more out of their existing root cause analysis program?
I would say that if you have a program, you may think it's the best, and it may be the best, but you may never know that. So I would suggest that it would be a good idea to have it audited. And unfortunately, it may sound like self-serving, but you can have an internal audit, and you should have internal audits. But almost everybody requires external audits of some kind at one point in time to ensure that you got a different set of eyes looking at that. I used to require my students to do a homework problem, and I would look at it and I say, you know, I'm sure that they think this is one of the best that's there, but there were a lot of issues with it. And I thought if they don't let them know about that, they're going to start believing that it's good and they may learn bad habits. So without some kind of audit, you may not know whether or not your program is as good as it could be or some of the issues that go along with that. The other tip would be that many times you run a program, but you don't have anything to gauge it against. So what you don't do is you don't put in metrics to gauge whether or not the program's working. And there are plenty of metrics you can use with RCA. You can use a trigger level at times, like if you have an 8-hour trigger for an RCA, start having RCAs, you move the trigger level down to 7, then 6, then 5. And so if you follow that trigger level, that'll tell you you're making some progress. You can follow closed cycles, numbers started per month. There's all sorts of metrics that you can use. So if you audit once in a while and have some metrics to gauge your program, I think that will help everybody maintain their program or improve their program.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I actually did an audit on a company and going through their maintenance process, and it's not just root cause analysis, but an overall assessment, and they had no process metrics for anything. They didn't know what their PM compliance was, how many hours or how many work orders they were completing a week, with schedule adherence was nothing. No performance measures whatsoever in that entire department. They didn't know where to focus. They didn't know what the problem was. It's, well, you're not measuring anything first. What is important? Establish that. Then we can figure out what measures we can use. And that'll tell you if you're on track or if you're off track. And then we can start to look at why.
That's right. You've heard those stories. I think there's one that says, what gets measured gets done, right?
Absolutely.
Or improved, I think, was it Deming that said, what gets measured gets improved, something like that. So, the other thing that some people don't recognize is sometimes you may not need a metric forever, but you may need it to change behavior. So put in something to drive a specific behavior and follow it and use it to be improved. And then if you don't need it later, go to something else. I used to do that a lot. Want to change a behavior, I'd put something in and tell everybody got oriented to it, and then we'd let it go because it wasn't necessary anymore, but it got what I needed, which is a changed behavior.
Now, continuing on trying to improve root cause analysis programs, what is the one thing you see done incorrectly and you would change if you had the opportunity?
The one thing I see done incorrectly is I see if people stop too soon. And so that obviously that's what I would suggest that they change, is stop stopping too soon. But what I mean by that is, perhaps an example might be a good way to look at that is, they'll get down there to be doing their RCA and they have all the proper causes, etc. And one of the causes might be that there's no PM in place. So they go, oh, great. So they stop because, hey, I can fix that. I can put a PM in place. That's great. It probably will keep that from happening again. But it's real important to ask the next couple of questions about why was there no PM? Because that leads you down the path of something like, we didn't know it needed one. We didn't know that failure mode existed. We didn't. There's never been an analysis, an RCM analysis, anything like that could there. And that leads you down the path of why not? And then that leads you into what's called I refer to as systemic problems. And systemic problems are those that are applied to the system. So if you found that there's no RCM analysis done, you can say, wait a minute, that's interesting. Not only here, but on any of this equipment, we got a real issue here. So our PM program might not be very good. So stopping too soon will keep you from reaching to the true systemic causes that can be very, very valuable to not only your area or a department or even as high as an organization or a corporation. So I might find one that was applicable to Alcoa from a small one that I did. So stopping too soon is the biggest issue I see, and fixing that would be not stopping too soon is the biggest issue that you do, because it's going to take a little bit of training. To some degree, that's just a matter of having some other folks look at it who know enough to go a little farther, but sometimes that's just pointing out that there's plenty of opportunities there.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing I would build on with that too is I often see organizations that they'll do a root cause analysis. They'll come up with three or four actions out of that. One might be to implement a PM program. One might be to update, the project handover process to make sure that before it's fully handed over, the PMs are developed, stuff like that. But what they do is they get the first two done. They don't get the second two actions done. Then they have this issue come up in the future. They look, we never implemented these other things we needed to do. So the one thing I would encourage everyone to do is if you have four actions or five actions come out of a root cause analysis, make sure you do them all. Don't just do the first one or two and move on.
That's a great point. And if you do an RCA and come up with solutions and you don't do all the solutions, then it's just a waste of time. And what a shame if they don't. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. The enterprise version of the software that we have does have a system in there that allows you to track that very efficiently. But I've also seen it done manually. And the ones that do well are the ones who have them all listed and they look at them weekly. And there's a person, a program champion, who's literally yelling at people if they don't get their stuff done to make sure it gets taken care of. So one way or the other, you are absolutely correct. You must follow up on all your solutions, otherwise you're going to miss things.
Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from this conversation today regarding root cause analysis?
I would have to say that you probably think that it's just a matter of doing some RCAs, where in reality, it's not that simple. You have to put some thought into it. You got to put a whole program together to make sure it's all interconnected. Otherwise, you're going to miss things. You need to have the training. You need to have a program. You need to have triggers. You need to have people involved. They need to know what their responsibilities are. So I guess the one thing is to recognize that the RCA program is not just a simply going out and fixing one small problem. If you really want to benefit from it, you have to incorporate it into your culture as an entire programmatic kind of opportunity for improvement for the plant.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it takes that cross-functional group of people. It's not just a maintenance thing. Some operations, you need procurement, you need, maybe in some cases, you need HR involved. But you need that cross-functional group to make sure you get the true root cause, get those different viewpoints within that incident you're investigating.
That's true. And one thing I like about the HALO methodology is that anybody can do it. And I've seen some of the best people that do it are non-technical folks. They just have a desire to do the right thing. So the cross-functional aspect says that it doesn't matter who's involved in this. As a matter of fact, another place I was at one time had one of the best programs I ever saw, and the people that were responsible for driving that were the operations side. And that makes the most sense to me, because operations are the ones that own the equipment. If the equipment doesn't run, they don't make product. And even though many of us have seen them yell at maintenance, in reality, the operations manager should be yelling at them, because they don't get their product out. For whatever reason, it's their responsibility to get it fixed. So that's another way that they should take away that operations should drive this whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kevin, I appreciate the time, the effort you put into this today. Where can people find out more about you? Are you going to be at any activities or events coming up?
Currently not scheduled. I used to be a big member of the SMRP, was part of their best practices group, and plan to get back into that, but just been slowly working back into the swing of things. So not scheduled for any events. Do have a webinar coming up with solutions, and if anybody has any interest in me personally, they can access my website at kpsreliability.com. I also have some resources there, some free 30-day trial for the reality charting. If anybody wants to do that, they should talk to me, because if they don't do it right, they won't get much out of it. But it is there. Some of the papers that we talked about are there, and the pillars and those kind of things. So if they're interested, they can get that information from that location.
Perfect. And I will make sure to include links in the show notes to the solutions webinar, your website, all that stuff, so people can find you, get in touch with you, and reach out with you. Not only root cause analysis, but other maintenance, reliability, and asset management activities that they may have that they're trying to work through.
Great, because I'm currently working with another company. Our responsibility is to improve that. We're taking them from a reactive maintenance organization to a proactive maintenance organization, and I'm assigned one of their plants, and it's a year-long process where we go through and help them put in place the individual components, but also help them with the root cause analysis and problem solving. So I do have a significant background in all those aspects. I'm still a zealot when it comes to root cause analysis, and that's what is interesting. Some folks have always looked at that and said, oh, he's just a root cause guy. I'm like, no, I can do it all. I just really focus on that, as you mentioned, because it's so valuable and pays such big dividends in short periods of time.
Well, Kevin, thank you very much for taking the time today. I truly appreciate it. I learned more about root cause analysis in this conversation with you, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. So on behalf of everyone, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.